Hi everyone, it's Brian Walker, CEO of Retail Doctor Group, and welcome to our podcast for this month on the future of retail. I'm delighted because this is an opportunity to spend some time with Maurice Missel, who is a business futurist and a foresight strategist. Some of my colleagues have had the pleasure of listening to Maurice and seeing him speak. Today we have that pleasure as well, because this is a man who thinks pragmatically, thinks of the future, and that's exactly where we want to be. So Maurice, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me on. I'm looking forward to the chat.
Likewise. And so you're quite positive about the future that we as retail leaders need to design. Is that fair to say?
What's the alternative, Brian? I mean, really, I'm a pragmatic optimist. I always have been. I believe that we as humans have always tried to resolve and find a way forward. We may not like what we're faced with. We may hate it in every instance possible. But again, as humans, what we do is push through it. And what we end up with is a solution or a resolution. And retail, like the broader landscape of business, has always done that as well.
It has, but it faces, or does it face, more change now than ever before? Does it face emerging and fast-paced technologies underpinning the way consumers shop, the way the retailers think about shopping, social consciousness, environmental awareness, a planet that's under extreme pressure? These are considerable opportunities and challenges for leaders. Is that fair to say?
I'm not so sure it is. Yeah. I mean, we're absolutely facing all the things you've just said. No two ways about it. But when we moved into the first department store in the late 1800s, 1870 in Paris, that was a step too far. I mean, that was beyond the norm. How could we move out of the village square? How could we move out of the small ma and pa store and move into this big department store? It will never work. When we moved into the malls, that will never work. I mean, that's incredible. That just takes us out of that department store that we knew and the ma and pa stores. And that was a step too far. In the 60s and 70s, we began to design a new retail landscape that was different from what we had before, predominantly retail before, especially transactionary retail. The basic day-to-day bread, milk, butter, and those sorts of things were strip shopping centres, predominantly built for a female audience. A very different landscape. Males weren't terribly involved in that landscape. Again, a step too far. Incredible. How could we do that? We began to put car spaces, the horror of it all, around shopping malls so we could travel to them and spend time in them. So I'm painting a picture where we have evolved constantly. All of those things were seen as things we had never seen before. New landscape that were just a step too far for retail. It will never recover. I remember the conversations, as you do, that this online retail space that we spoke about at the end of last century, early this century, was just the devil incarnate. It was never going to be a part of our life. How could it ever be? People will not shop online. And of course, we have evolved and resolved since then. I'm not downplaying what we've been through to in the last couple of years. I'm not downplaying what technology has brought and what it will be and the things we'll speak about in the next little while as well. What I'm saying is they're human evolutions. They're things that in a broader landscape, they were not done to spite retail. They were choices humans have made about the way that they want to evolve their lives, their culture, society, the built environment, and retail responds to all of those things, as it will have to continue to do.
And so you're an advocate of designing the future, or futures, as you would say, or to be squeezed by them. What does that mean for a leader that's facing their generational changes? You spoke eloquently about the advent of the department store, and my mind went to the advent of the metaverse, you know, and these are all about designing futures.
They are. And again, that's the important word. You've pluralized it. It's futures. And the reason for that is not that we're all entering into different future, but that as strategists, as leaders, as visionaries, as owner of businesses, we have to prepare ourselves that there is no known future. We're not working towards some predetermined space. I'm not talking in a religious sense. I'm talking in a business sense, that what we are going to do is to create a space that we think responds to the future needs of our customers, the future needs of our staff and our stakeholders and those around us. We're going to create that with the best of intent, with the best of knowledge that we have, with what we think those universes, spaces might be, if they're digital, physical, metaverse, or whatever else. And we're going to stock them, and we're going to supply them. We're going to put a logistics chain around them. We're going to do promotion. We're going to do all the things that we have done to make those spaces work for us as tomorrow's leaders in retail, we need to ask ourselves, where are people most likely to congregate? Where are they most likely to buy from? How might we buy that? What's the consumer behavior behind that? And the other thing that I think is terribly important that 10, 15 years ago was such a difficult conversation with retailers and with managers generally is that we need to be congruent through all those spaces. We're not a different being. We're not a different retailer because we have a physical entity. And then we're not a different retailer because we're online or because we're in the metaverse. There is a core, there is a soul, there is a purpose, there is a way that we present ourselves to the world. And we have to be absolutely dogmatically sure that we are constant with that persona right through all the experiences. And the last little piece in that also is that as a retailer, we have a choice. The choice is, do we want to be where the mainstream of our clients, customers are, or do we not want that? We cannot decide that we don't want the metaverse because it doesn't suit us as business owners. We cannot decide that we don't want the internet because it doesn't suit us as business owners. We can make the choice though, that that doesn't fit us and we're not going to be there. But it has to be a conscious choice about that business understanding the limitations of that choice, which is not a negative, but it is a limitation that we have to be aware of. It's part of our strategy and that can work beautifully, but we can't be deniers. We can't say these spaces don't exist and close our eyes to it because our customers are not that kind. They will go there anyway.
And so you speak about the future of imagination and its importance to leaders. And as I was listening to you, Morrison, as our listeners listen, these lovely human elements of the pioneers in any industry, in any sector, was their ability to vision and their courage to be imaginative and then put it into play. Is that fair to say?
Oh, it's so important. It's one of the most overlooked traits, I think, that we have as managers. And there is a reason for that. I think it's a good reason, but there's a reason for that. And that's because the management style of the last 40 or 50 years, maybe the last 100 years, Industrial Revolution, and I kind of sweep everything under that big rug. It's not as easy as that. Taught us that there was a precise methodology. There was a set of tools, a set of practices, a set of people that we brought in with specific skills to do a certain job. Everybody kind of fitted beautifully and elegantly together into that orchestra, and that we really couldn't imagine a better way to do it because it didn't make sense. It was going to disrupt everything. And that's the model that we've worked under for a long period of time. For many of us, it's kind of hard to give up on that. We kind of think there's a perfect way to do something. There is a solution, a future. And the more we get into this future space, the things you spoke about before, the ever-changing landscapes, we learn that there isn't a perfect ongoing way to do anything. There's just a perfect way perhaps of doing it right now. But we need to be open and imaginative to what that perfection might look like in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year. And that requires imagination because, yes, I absolutely agree. The great pioneers have been able to see things that other people haven't. They've been able to say that this might be something of merit. This might be worth spending a little bit of my time on. Pragmatically, I need to get through today. Absolutely. And I think 70% of business is just getting through today, getting through the things we need to do, making sure they're as good as we can be, that everything is as we want it to be. Our customers are being well maintained. 20% though is about looking for the possibility of understanding how the world is impacting, how it's changing, and what we might have to do to respond to that. And then the last 10% is the absolute, which I think is the most joyful space, and that's to hell with the world. I'm going to imagine what this space might be. If I was starting from zero, if I was coming from Mars, if I was that mythical creature and I could restart this industry or this world, how might I want it to be? And what can I do now to bring that to fruition? That's 10% of glory, 10% of joy that I think everybody should have the opportunity to play in their lives. And that's where the true visionaries, most of the names that our listeners can think of about people that have influenced the landscape, have played in that joyous 10% space.
And will we see a generation of people soon to be born, if not born already, that have grown up with borderless environments in terms of being consumers? They're no longer driving to the mall the way that we once did. They've got their autonomous vehicle taking them to some physical space. face, blended in with a virtual and digital reality 24/7, who will be opened potentially to the realm of imagination like no other generation before, because they won't be bound by just one physical reality.
They'll be bound by dynamic reality. Dynamic reality is something that changes literally minute by minute, circumstance by circumstance. We've spent millenniums as human beings building a physical world, and we're comfortable with that, and we know that. We've spent the last 30 years building this world of computers and PCs and digital, and we're getting comfortable with that. Look how far retail has come in that space over the last 30 years, over the last 10 years, over the last 2 years. What we're going to do over the next while, over the next decades, is build a spatial world. That is the sandwiching of those two things together, where the physical world and the digital world intersect for each of us as individuals, and it changes dynamically, literally minute by minute. A great example of that is that we're sitting in our car. We are driving around, and once we might have pulled out a physical map and tried to figure out how to get from A to B, and we wouldn't have known much about what was happening three blocks down the road, and we would have taken that road with a little bit of confidence. Today, we sit in our cars, and we have this internet that brings in information and advice and tells us the road we normally take is now chock-a-block with traffic. Take a left, take a right, go down some obscure street. And we have faith in that. For some of us, we have a heads-up display in our car that actually gives us that image of the physical world that we're seeing in front of us, but with a digital overlay. And all of that's changing. The dance is constantly being updated. It knows we like coffee and it might take us on a diversion to our favorite coffee place. It knows our wife is down the road or our husband's down the road and it might take us on that diversion. It's this mixture that we all live in now of our mobile phones, of our smart devices, of all the technology which is physical and digital that is now hyper-personalizing itself for us. And that's where I think our lives, and especially retail, is headed. This hyper-personalized world that knows exactly where the physical element is, knows exactly where the shop is or the device or the car or the dress or the whatever we're buying. It knows us as individuals through our digital devices. So it knows how we like to shop and where and what and when we bought the last whatever it was and where we might be going in 3 weeks, and therefore we might need something for that particular event or that trip. And then the spatial brings the two together. It makes all of that personalized for you and I. That, to me, is also the vision of what a true meta world, that meta world is, that megaverse that we talk about. I think that's where we're headed.
What a great answer. And you know, Buckminster and Fuller talk about the doubling of knowledge, the acceleration of knowledge. And as I listen and think about this hyper-personalized world, I wonder about what knowledge will mean. Will it mean that we as consumers will think about education and knowledge all the way through to how we consume in a different way? Will retail leaders be thinking about much more focus on technology around hyper-personalizing? And how far can that go? You know, if every single touch point in my entire working day and living day has hyper-personalized points, I no longer carry an iPhone or a device because it's all in my glasses or it's all on my watch. It can predict everything about me. Where to individual knowledge and ingenuity if someone else is doing it for me?
Sounds like a sad world to me. I mean, it's not the world that I see ahead. I do see that we have the ability to use all these devices. I hope as humans we make choices not to all the time.
And that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because we're spending an average now, what is it, almost 5 hours a day on a smartphone device. It's crazy.
Getting worse. Now that you put smartwatches and other things into it, now that we literally are almost encased by technology, we're having to make conscious choices. I see that. I know that a lot of people lament. I know a lot of people listening to us will lament the fact that that's the world we live in. I truly don't think that's the world for everybody. I think many people are making conscious choices. What I'm seeing is that we were kids in a candy store, that we just wanted to look there and we were besotted by all of this. As this matures, as we get more used to it, I don't think we are as besotted anymore. I hope that we can make conscious choices away from it. But that's a human thing. Again, it's not the technology that's wrong, because technology is benign. It is only an on or off switch. It's the humans that choose to use it.
Yes, although, of course, it's the technology in the hands of people who want us to consume more. So if I think about the behavioral sciences design in some of the, you know, devices we use today and the little endorphin rushes that go on every time this thing dings or makes a sound, I think to myself, well, who is captive to whom? And there's a profit motive behind this, of course.
There absolutely is. It's this whole gamification of life. I mean, really what you're talking about is psychology. I remember this conversation 15 years ago or so and being told how perverse it was and how many people would not be a part of this world of gamification, which is the ability to do what you've just said, to understand the human psyche and to be able to point our thinking in a particular direction or encourage us to do something or to buy something, or because it can stimulate us in this direction, it pushes us in that direction. It has great implications in health in other spaces, and in retail, it has been used for, I mean, forever, even if it hasn't been the psychology of technology as we understand it. Gamification has been in the way perhaps that we physically laid out our stores, in the merchandising, in the way that we ingested smells into it. We were gamifying long before technology or these sorts of things. I'm not an apologist for technology, by the way, but I am always mindful that it's humans that are using the technology. So back to your earlier point, I think that what we're heading into is a world where information and knowledge is the purview of technology. Information is where it, all that thing, you know, that thing what we might call Google, but it's much bigger than that. It's all the zeros and ones and the ease with which we can find data out. We know that lives now inside of technology, way beyond it. Very few people remember phone numbers, for instance. We just don't bother. We know that we can easily get our fingers onto a keyboard or some voice onto a piece of technology and find answers. Knowledge is a stitching together of various disparate pieces of information to make some sense out of it. That's kind of knowledge to me. And I think technology is doing that increasingly. And we will see through artificial intelligence, which I don't think exists yet, but will come to, machine learning, all those kinds of things, it will get better at giving us knowledge. What humans have to do, which is what humans have always had to do, is to use wisdom. Wisdom is, are these things right for me in this moment? Is this purposeful to me? I know I'm being told it by a piece of benign technology. Am I going to blindly listen to it and follow the road because it's telling me this is the best path, to go back to my knowledge, my analogy of sitting in a car? Am I going to follow that because this piece is telling me it's the best way to go? Or because I've taken this road so often, am I really going to be a bit wise and say, yeah, I get what you're telling me, but I'm actually going to go the way I want to go and take the route I want to take?
And of course, yes, there's a wonderful discussion to have about wisdom and at what age wisdom starts to even appear. But yes, I
take disappear.
Or to disappear, that's right. But in this hyper-personalized world, retailers will double down on personalizing information, prediction, subscription models, all the things that we can see coming down the track. How ultimately do retailers think about differentiating, and how do they really think about the uniqueness of their proposition? If they're caught in a swamp of everyone hyper-personalizing their message, their content, their time, you know, I suspect that time will be one of the great battlefields the future. Time of consumer, how retailers use time. Time is a currency.
Time, I agree with you, I think will become one of the most valuable things we have. And we're making choices already of how we choose to use our time. And the last 2 years has changed for many. I'm not sure forever, but for the moment has changed what we see, the importance of time and how we use it. But back to your other point, the hyper-personalization for me is something that happens inside technology. It's the ability for that technology to be able to understand who we are and what we are as individuals, and then to find a match somewhere in that megaverse. And that match is a retailer, because it offers, or he or she or whatever that pronoun is, offers something of value. What retailers need to do, which is what I don't think has changed forever, and that is to be appreciant to the customer, appreciant to the needs of that person, to make sure that that product is customer facing, that it's priced accordingly, that it's positioned accordingly, that its logistics match what that customer's looking for. If we take my analogy, my first one, of technology making that match for us, of saying that Brian needs this and I'm going to go out and look for it, and this is all independent of Brian in the background, then bring him a selection of alternatives, it's going to look for yes and no's. Does this match the majority of things that Brian needs? He needs it delivered today. He needs it in this price point. He needs it in this color. He needs it and come back to you and say, this retailer or these retailers match that criteria. That's no different from doing it in the physical store. In the physical store, we also had to be mindful that all of our ducks were in a row, that everything was positioned appropriately. I don't think we need to be fearful of technology. I think, in fact, it helps us to see what's needed by our customers and to provide it in a way that's meaningful. But let's not believe for a moment that all retail is governed by technology, because it's, again, predominantly a human activity. If we take out the transactionary retails, which to me are the milk, the breads, the decisions we make quite easily, that if one brand's not available, we can swap out, you know, those kinds of things, I think perhaps that's best online. That might be something that we can give to an online presence. Maybe down the track, the milk orders itself, maybe the bread orders itself, maybe when our socks wear out, we get new socks. You know, those kinds of things I think might be a technology conversation, hyper-personalized. But humans love, we're social beings, we're herd animals, H-E-R-D, herd animals. We love to go out, we love to congregate. Retail to me is a combination of theater and sport. It's theatre because I want to go into an environment that makes me feel in a particular way. I want it to look the way I think it should be. And it's sport because I enjoy it. It's something that gives me activity. It allows me to go out. We shouldn't forget that that's another realm of it. And that I know can be aided by technology, but it's still humans in a physical environment.
Yeah, look, I agree. And in the remaining time, if I sort of fast forward a little bit, or perhaps one step back, we built retail networks on the proposition of the shop on every corner, that it was all about scale. It was the McDonald's approach. The department stores followed suit, and everyone had a shop on every corner. The ability to provide theatre and sport at that level with a consumer that is now getting more and more choice, and in the future will continue to get more choice, and the integration, as you nicely talk about, Morris, of those channels, such that I can be home and a device will bring up a metaverse for me if that's what I want, or I can go and visit a mall, or I can look online, whatever it is, must by definition change the physical distribution. Because there's a finite amount of time consumers will have to shop with far and far more choices for how they choose to shop. And the physical shop will have to stand out for its theatrical and experiential elements. And I think we're going to see retailers not building 100 of them in many categories, but building showstoppers, theatre, cathedrals of retail, if you like. And then everything else will be a lineage or a homage to that, and a convenience channel to that as well. Do you see distribution changing as a consequence?
Distribution is changing anyway. I mean, it's moving away from a centralised system, which is one warehouse somewhere, and you will get it when we can get it to you, to a decentralised peer-to-peer system where I need to get it to you when you want it in the time frame that you think you deserve it. We have difficulty in that last, you know, in that last 1 hour, 2 hour, last mile, whatever you want to call it. I think that will take some time to resolve. I'm not sure that we ever, well, not ever, but I'm not sure in the short term that we'll elegantly do that. Drones, I don't think, will be the answer necessarily. People running around in their cars trying to get us things within 10 minutes, I don't think also will be. But there are ways that we can make it happen. To your other point, though, retail to me, again, not everywhere, because it will be different for different customers with different brands, with different experiences. But I very much think that retail is about the experience. As you said, it's about showtelling. It is about creating an environment in which people see a story. Storytelling is so important now that they walk into a retail store, and if they're buying some shoes or sneakers or runners or whatever the appropriate word is, that they're not just seeing a range of those runners on a wall. They're actually getting an experience of walking in there, and there's something about that environment that energizes them and makes them want to feel as if they are running or walking or whatever the appropriate shoe is going to do for them. And it allows them to have that experience as well as buy. And then does it matter where the cash register rings, which is something I've said for a long time. As long as the cash register rings, does it matter if it rings in store or online or on their mobile phone? We need to capture them. We want them to ensure they don't go to our competitors. I understand all the pragmatism of that, but that can be done.
But does it matter if I physically am there or I can do it vicariously through my avatar?
I don't think it matters at all, as long as the person doing it is happy with that experience. I'm not sure it's an avatar either. I think as humans, we should be given the right to be able to represent ourselves in whatever way we want, whether that's physical or through some digital incarnation. As long as we feel it's an appropriate experience, as long as we're willing to put our hand in our pocket and exchange something we have of value with something the other person has, then it's perfect.
And Morris, I'm comforted by the fact that my particular avatar, my personal avatar, weighs less and doesn't have any wrinkles.
As am I. Again, I'm not so sure about avatars. I think that they're overhyped. We've certainly seen Zuckerberg get into trouble in the last little while about his avatar and the way it looks. Yeah. It is more about, I honestly don't think it's about our representation, our digital representation in this space. I think it's more of a soul thing. I think it's more the essence of who we are online, and we may find a digital manifestation of that. What we do need to realize is that whether we like it or not, for the vast majority of us, we have put up more information into this world, this digital world, than we even imagine. Let's start to retrieve some of that for our own purpose. Let's start to make sense and purpose out of that and allow that, which is called a digital twin, another conversation for another day. A digital twin is really what we're talking about now. And this digital twin knows as much about us because it is our digital self. And in many ways, it can make decisions as our physical self might have done.
Yeah, it's an excellent comment. One last, if I may. When we look at history, we see history punctuated by game-changing events, circuit breakers. COVID is one of those. In your mind, Morris, it's a game changer, do you think?
I think COVID has been the remaking of us. I mean, I don't apologize for anything it's caused to us for a moment. I wish we'd never seen it or heard of it. But the reality is, as humans, we've had to respond. What we've done in the last 2.5 years since COVID is we have lived experiences that we never thought we would have before. People that never thought they would shop online, all of a sudden are shopping online. Retailers that thought they could only sell one item or one set of goods, all of a sudden realized they had to find complementary goods. We began to look at collaborations, other people that we might be able to sell through or with. If we can't open our physical stores, could we open a window to the world physically or digitally? There were lived experiences we were forced to have. There were work spaces that we were forced to change, styles of work that we had to change. One of the other big changes that was going to happen anyway was, and this is a difficult one to talk about, is that our CBD, our central business district, which accounts for so much of our retail, for me was something that was going to disappear anyway. And it would have taken perhaps another 10 years or 15 years. What we've seen now is COVID again has exacerbated, that's quickened it up. And what we're moving to, for me, I think, is more of a CLD, which is a central leisure district. And that's a very different way of being and seeing. Retail will still be a part of this. It'll still be an imperative because humans want to buy and sell and have and enjoy. But how we do it, when we do it, the hours we do it in, the physicality that we do it in, all of that's going to change in this central leisure district. And again, we talked about imagination, we talked about the future landscape, we talked about our listeners being visionaries, that 10% I spoke about before. I'd love some of us to play in that central leisure district 10% and imagine, not that retail disappears, because it never will. It never has. We've always exchanged ever since we put on this earth. We will continue to exchange and have for the rest of humanity's existence. But the way we do it will change. And that's in that 10%. And yeah, we absolutely can imagine that.
Well, Morris Missel, thank you very much. And I'm looking forward personally to our next session about digital twins. Looking forward to meeting mine. And it will take some imagination. And you're a master at that. So on behalf of everyone listening to today's Retail Doctor Group Future of Retail podcast, Morris Missel, we thank you. And we look forward to the next one.
An absolute pleasure.
Thank you. If anyone would like to get in touch with you to present on the future of society, retail, consumerism, how do they best do that?
So it's morrisfuturist.com. And not just keynotes also, but I do a lot of advisory stuff.
Right.
If you're looking to improve your business fitness or for more information, please feel free to get in touch with the team via our website, retaildoctor.com.au. Email us at businessfitness@retaildoctor.com.au or connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. We look forward to hearing from you.